Hi, and welcome to the Rare Business Podcast. My name is Adrian Swinsko, and I'm a consultant, advisor, researcher, and writer on all things related to customer service and customer experience. Through this podcast, I seek out and interview CEOs, entrepreneurs, business and tech leaders, and leading thinkers about what it takes to build organizations that produce better outcomes for both customers and employees in this fast-moving modern age that we live in. If this is your first time listening to one of these interviews, then welcome. And please do dive into the archives at adrianswinsko.com, as I've now completed over 250 of these interviews in the last few years. If this is not your first time listening, then thank you for returning, and I'll aim to do a good enough job to keep you coming back week after week. Anyway, that's enough from me right now. Let's get into the interview. So welcome to the next edition of the Rare Business Podcast. With me today, I have Eva Klein, who is the VP of Customer Success at HubSpot. Hi, Eva. Hi. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I am splendid. So Eva, for the benefit of our listeners and readers, can you tell us a little bit about you and the work that you do?
Sure. So as you mentioned, I head up customer success here at HubSpot. At HubSpot, we have quite a few teams under that umbrella. The teams that I manage are our implementation team. So they're responsible for onboarding all of our customers. I also run our CSM team, which is our customer success managers, and our professional services team here at HubSpot.
Perfect. So we were talking prior to the scheduling of this interview, and you were telling me about your approach to customer success and, you know, and how, you know, customer success has become a thing, blah, blah, blah. And your approach has changed over the last couple of years. I mean, before we get into the detail, can you tell me a little bit about what customer success means to you and HubSpot?
So I've used this definition here to kind of frame how I look at customer success, and it's really about thinking when customers are successful, when their expectations are essentially met throughout their life cycle, right? So based on what they bought, did they see success with it in a way that they're going to become an advocate of HubSpot and want to grow both with their own business and with HubSpot? So buying more products and using more of the tools that we have. But it really comes down to making sure as a customer evolves, as they're growing, as they're going through the changes of their own business, that HubSpot is running along in parallel, giving them what they need to be successful at all of those milestones.
Right. Okay. So given that your approach has sort of changed, can you give us a little bit of the kind of fill in the kind of us with a bit of color around the backstory about around and also around about what your approach was and kind of what happened to make you change your approach?
Yeah, definitely. So I started at HubSpot a little less than a year and a half ago. And there's this story of a meeting, and there's always like a story of a meeting, and I was in it and with my boss and a lot of the other leaders in the customer success organization. And we were talking about the teams and what they were, how they were performing, and someone referenced it being like a sales team, and my boss said, "Don't call it a sales team." And I took a second, and we left the meeting, and I caught up with him in the hall on the way back to our desks, and I said, "Hey, like, we're measuring them monthly. They have quotas," and I started going through this like list of things, and maybe there were like four or five things. And I said, and he looks at me and his eyes widen, and he's like, "Oh my gosh," it was like this epiphany. He's like, "We have a sales team." And he takes a second and he goes, "We have a really good sales team." I was like, "Yeah, we do. But you know, as the saying goes, you know, if it looks like a duck, it quacks like a duck, guess what? It's a duck." So we from that moment on, we kind of took this approach of like, gosh, we're asking people whose DNA is to help customers. They've got this customer gene in them, and we're asking them to do something that might be pretty unnatural for them, which is sell. And right, they were focused on, you know, renewals and upsells, cross-sells, you name it. And we realized we weren't doing our customers any favors by doing that. And so we took a step back and we said, if we truly want to be a customer-centric org, we need to make sure that our customers are seeing success along the way, and that our people aren't distracted by things that matter to HubSpot, right? Like cross-sells and upsells and renewals. We really, truly want them focused on what I was talking about earlier, which is making customers successful. Mm-hmm. And so flash forward to where we are today, we've taken cross-sell and upsell, we've put that back into our sales organization, and then we've taken the renewal, and we've spun up a team of renewal managers, and they're responsible for the renewal. The nice thing about all of that is the CSM is still really, really core to the customer's experience through those processes, both in buying more from HubSpot as well as going through the renewal, because they have so much context and they're seen as an advisor through that process. So you know, it's been quite a transition. I wouldn't say we're all the way through it for sure, but we think it's the right thing to have our customer teams focusing on customers.
And so tell me, so you talked about, so you've got a sales team that are looking after new customers and acquisitions and things, and then you've also got the within that kind of also broader team, you've also got a team which is also looking at upsell, cross sell, and so on and so forth. But so I'm clear, so the success team is then sort of more about renewals, but then you're going to say, you're also saying that they also can help out in that sort of acquisition and also cross sell, upsell. So if that's right, does that mean that the success team has this almost two-pronged approach? One, they're responsible for renewals, but they're also enabling or supporting or helping the other teams?
Yeah, I would say it's the latter more so than anything. And this kind of leads into how we measure the team, because we had been measuring them on revenue retention, and now we still measure them on a number we call customer dollar retention, which is basically the dollars that you have going into the month, how many do you keep coming out of it. But yeah, it's really a trailing indicator, right? It tells you about the work that you've been doing for the last year. Mm-hmm. And so what we've been trying to do is really get the teams focused on customer health in that in between renewals, so that they're more likely to renew down the road. So one of the things that we look at, we have health checks. And yeah, a lot of companies do these, right? And they're, you know, color coded. We have four colors, red, orange, yellow, and green. We run customer data through our customer base, or we run kind of analytics through our customer base, and it spits out a color and it tells us, using a variety of different data points, what that customer is from a health perspective, right?
Right.
So we take a look at that, and we use that as a tool to telling us, are they likely to renew? Are they seeing value out of the software? That combined with the kind of human indicators, right? So when you get off the phone with the customer and they're like, you know what, I really like your software, I'm using it a ton, but I just took a call from one of your competitors. We need to take both of those sides of the, you know, kind of conversation into account when we're looking at customer health. But we look at those things, we look at NPS, we look at a lot of different factors, and that's really where we want the team focused and measured. So. Okay. Yeah. So, they care about the renewal. They care about the cross-sell and upsell. But neither of those things are going to happen until a customer is healthy and seeing what they expected to see out of the software and the tools that they bought when they, you know, first became a customer of HubSpot.
Okay. And how does that work when you reorganize this way? How does that work in terms of incentives? Because I think that, I mean, I spoke to a few people about this, and one of the biggest challenges is that when you, if you like, take a business which is, if you like, had traditional a sales team and then a service and marketing and things, that sometimes the cracks get magnified because the incentives across the teams are not aligned. So how have you approached that?
You're 100% right. And I wouldn't say that we haven't figured out yet. We're getting there. But one of the things we had to make sure we did was ensure that the sales team, who is now responsible for cross-sell and upsell, cared about cross-sell and upsell, right? Because it's typically a smaller amount than a new sale. And how do we get them to stop focusing on the new sale and start focusing on the cross-sell and upsell? So we're rolling that out now. That's something that's evolving, where we're trying to figure out what the right comp model is. You know, is it that we introduce a sales team solely focused on selling into our install base and that's their only metric? Or do we split apart the comp structure so that there's a component that's for new sales and a component that's for selling into our install base? So those are things that we're figuring out now. We'll end up with one of those models. On the renewal manager side, we look at metrics like, you know, how many, it's very similar. I would say we're more aligned there. We had to be, because they actually, our renewal management team sat in our services org for most of the transition. They actually just moved to sales. So it'll be interesting to see how aligned we get from a comp standpoint. But those are the things that we're thinking about. On the CSM side, they had a pretty significant portion of their compensation that was variable. And it was based on revenue retention. And now that we removed those and we're focusing on customer dollar retention, it's actually really hard to have a variable component for a few reasons. Right. One is, right, like customer dollar retention doesn't move dramatically. It's very hard to move it in month. So to give somebody, even though like 0.5% is very meaningful to, or 0.5 point is very meaningful to HubSpot, it's hard to put compensation bands around 0.5 point of customer dollar retention, right? And so, you know, that was something that we thought about. And then honestly, we wanted to make sure that if we were going to pay people on things, that they have control over it and that our reporting is really tight. And because it was so new, we just really thought, you know, it doesn't feel right to pay somebody on something that we're not, it's a new measurement for us. And right. So we actually pulled variable comp from our CSM org. And we were worried about it. We thought, oh my gosh, we've had all these people who have been, you know, doing this sales motion for years, and you know, they're not going to be selling anymore and they're not going to have variable comp. Like, are they all going to leave because now we've like trained them to be really good salespeople?
Right.
And in my own org, you know, which I have, we have a couple hundred people, right? And I think we only had a handful that were like, hey, I really like the sales piece of this. I'd like to go into the sales org. And the rest of them were like, no, thank you. I actually really wanted to do customer success work.
Right. So. And so I think the thing that's also that's interesting is that when people get the organization bit right, or change in the organization, and then they start to think about putting in place a new sort of incentive structure to try and align interests and things. That's all very well and good, because that's almost like the hard stuff. And then there's the kind of the soft stuff that is almost essential to ensure success, as it were. I mean, I guess what my question would be is, like, what did you do to try and almost communicate that, build the right sort of culture, the right sort of kind of people, the right sort of mix? And also, did you see any hangover or fallout from that change?
Yeah. I mean, certainly it's been an evolution. We only made the change about a year ago. Actually, I think it was May 1st that it officially kind of went into place of 2017. Leading up to it, we did a lot of communication around the why, right? And it really came back to the single most important metric, the single most important thing that all of us can rally around and support cross-functionally is customer success.
Right.
And we really went back to that messaging over and over. And I think that just made sense. I think it was really logical. Mm-hmm. The parts that I think have been hard to navigate is are more around you know, we had these team members selling, and now we had a new team selling who, you know, keep in mind our sales team previously had signed up new customers and then were not involved in the relationship.
Sure.
So it wasn't just an evolution or a change on the customer success side of the organization, but it was also on the sales side where we were like, hey, you got to go back in and talk to these customers that you sold, you know, months and years ago. And you've got to know the product a little bit better, right? Because now they're using it. Now it's no longer a dream that you're selling. It's reality. And so, you know, there was a lot of, I would say, trepidation going into the install base on the sales side, you know, and what it exposed is a real need for a partnership across the org. And I would say we did not nail that coming out of the gate. Like we're still working on it and still looking at like, how do we make sure that all of the people who are involved in customer success have a stake in it from an incentive perspective, but also feel comfortable and confident having those conversations with the customer.
Right. So, I mean, that kind of sounds like, because it sounds like, see, there's a reorganization and then there's the impact across all these different teams. I mean, so the impact has been broad across kind of like sales, marketing, success, service, your service sort of teams, and all these other domains like new acquisitions and, you know, cross-sell, upsell and retention and things. But is the impact just restricted to those teams, or have you actually, when you think about, you know, this idea, like what is success mean to us? I mean, has it gone further than that? And you've actually had to give the whole organization a bit of a talking to, as it were.
Yeah. You know, I think every company likes to say that they're customer centric. And then when you start to peel back the layers, you start looking at it and you're like, huh, that's not very really customer. Yeah. Yeah. And I think we were no exception. And I still think we aspire to be customer centric. And it's something that is a North Star for us, certainly. But there's two areas, I would say, outside of what we've been talking about, which changed. One was we actually have a retention target in product now.
Right.
And that is really important to making sure that our product teams are developing product and fixing product that our customers, existing customers, need and want. Mm-hmm. And I think if you don't do that, you get, it's very easy to have your product team focused on what the next customer wants and the new customer wants, which is fine. I think there's a healthy balance there, but it's easy to neglect the people who are loyal to your product and loyal to your business if you don't have some sort of retention metric.
Right.
We also have product responsible for our NPS number as well. That's actually throughout the organization. And so NPS, for example, is led out of product, but it's a cross-functional team that focuses on it with, you know, people from marketing and customer success, product, sales, you name it. So those are kind of the two ways that we really evolved our product team with this big shift. The other is, I am a little, I don't know if I'm embarrassed to admit this. I know why we did it, but we didn't have a customer marketing team.
Okay.
So what we had was a team that was focused on cross-sell and upsell. So, you know, they would go into our base, identify, you know, cross-sell and upsell opportunities. And I would say we didn't do a great job at it. But that was the extent of customer marketing at HubSpot up until actually January of this year. And so we spent a good part of 2017 trying to talk through what the value of having a customer marketing team would be. And
right.
HubSpot had tried it in the past and it had fizzled. And it was, our teams were primarily focused on acquisition. And so it really took us thinking about Well, actually, it was a positioning exercise, if I'm completely honest. And I think I had a meeting and I said, look, you can't cross-sell and upsell or renew any customer that isn't seeing success on the product first. And it was this moment of you know what, your conversion rates are going to be so much higher if we have more successful customers. Mm-hmm. And it was like, oh, so I think that really helped us and helped guide us. And we launched the customer marketing team in January of this year. And, you know, we're really focusing on customer outcomes, milestones, mapping out the customer journey, which probably sounds like, you know, pretty normal, but is new for us here. We've tried in the past and not done particularly well, but that's where we're at. And I'm super excited to be partnered with them. We work really closely with them and they work really closely with sales as well. So they're this nice bridge between making sure that our customers are successful and then teeing up opportunity for our sales team.
You know, thank you for your honesty and openness, because it's, you know, it's refreshing and I'm sure people will appreciate that. And it also kind of shows that, you know, whilst we're talking about, you know, service and experience and success and journey mapping and all these different sort of things, that, and it can all feel a little bit familiar sometimes.
Yeah.
That actually many organizations, you know, including yours, are still almost going through this and learning the habits and the behaviors and learning what and how it makes sense for them. And it's like this organic process. So I just would say, yeah, thank you for sharing that and being so honest with about where you are on your journey. But I think the thing that I was thinking about then was this idea you talked about, journey mapping, and then that made me think about this idea I'm hearing a lot of people talking about and sort of bemoaning a tech first approach or tech first and only approach to experience things, particularly across digital across a customer's journey and particularly digital touch points. I mean, and how they are thinking about or complaining about this lack of kind of a human touch or a humanless service, as it were. I mean, what's your approach to achieving that human and tech balance for your customers? Or is that something that's still emerging?
Oh, it's definitely emerging. And I would say it is the thing that I think most about right now. Okay. And I think there's probably three categories that I think about. And it's, you know, customers or users that come in through our freemium products. Mm-hmm. And to us, that's truly a tech touch, right? So, yes. You know, no humans for the most part, and a real self-service solution. We need to make sure that our products are really simple and straightforward, and that the messaging and the best practices are woven throughout that customer journey. Right. And so when I hear tech touch, that's what I think about. It makes me a little, I don't know, it makes me a little nervous when I hear people talking about tech touch for customers that are in a different category, right? So as I think about beyond freemium, when people are paying customers, mm-hmm. there's really kind of two sides to how we think about them. And it's a low touch approach and a high touch approach. And both of them rely on the tech touch experience, right? So really thinking about how can we get our product and our messaging to run in parallel to the human side of our business? And right. I will tell you, HubSpot has done really, really well on the human side. So I think our customers know us for our support. We put, CSMs on all accounts that are anyone who's a customer can talk to a CSM and really work through strategy. And I think we've done a pretty good job on the high touch side, really giving customers what they want. But we recognize that there's a pretty big segment of customers that either don't want or don't need as much human interaction as we provide. and so I would say where our evolution is probably more on the low touch side and really thinking about how do we replace the value that a human provided in product and through our messaging and through right. the customer experience, but don't completely neglect the customer in the process. So at all points, give them an opportunity to talk to a human and make sure that we're not overly reliant on our systems.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, it's because sometimes you don't want to, it's being conscious that even within different kind of categories or the different ways that, yeah, I guess you might have customers that engage with you in the same way commercially, but they will have different characteristics, and you've got to be able to flex your approach according to their needs, as it were.
That's right. We have personas, right? And okay. one of the personas that we have is a really technical persona, right? Who is used to coming in and tinkering and setting things up and doesn't need a whole lot of handholding from us
right.
and doesn't want it. And if a customer doesn't want it and we're kind of, you know, force feeding it to a customer, it doesn't feel right. It's not what we're going after. Mm-hmm. But we also recognize that making somebody or you know, expecting somebody to navigate our product and know how to use it and know how to get connected and all of the things that happen with, you know, people today, we really need to lean on our product and messaging to help them along in a way that we haven't before.
Yeah. Okay. No, that makes sense. So, We talked about all these, you know, these things are how they're changing and stuff, and how your approach is kind of changed. I mean, and that could, some people might be thinking, yeah, okay, I can see that. But it could also feel a little bit abstract to some people as well. I mean, could you give me some examples around how your approach has changed sort of almost in reality in terms of what sort of things would your customers have experienced now that they wouldn't have experienced before, in order to make that change come to life, if you know what I mean?
Do you mean specifically with like the high touch, low touch, tech touch experience,
or just more generally around kind of your changing approach to success? I mean, it's almost like we wouldn't have done that in the past, but we're doing it now because this is how we've changed things. If you know what I mean?
I do. Yeah. So a few things, like if. I don't know if a customer would realize it, first of all, and that's the goal.
okay.
Yeah, which is actually the goal, right? Like, we don't want our customers to come in and say, gosh, I'm really getting, my service level has really changed. That's the goal here, is to make sure that a customer doesn't feel that way, that they feel like, you know, based on their persona, you know, how they interact with us, that we're giving them the right service at the right time and the right product experience as well. So we've made a lot of changes. For example, like we've, you know, built out programs for what we call like customers that are in a particularly high MRR. Even though it's not actually our target audience, we have quite a few customers in the enterprise space, and just really thinking about how we deliver services, because that's what they expect at that level, right? They have very, very complex business needs. And so we reduce kind of our CSM ratios up at that level and map out plans for them where we're okay. true business consultants. And then on the other side, on the low touch side, some of the things that we do, and again, I don't think customers would necessarily see this or experience it, but because we, you know, have ambitious customer growth goals, we've got to be really building out our team approach to mm-hmm. customer success. And so some customers will go straight into a customer team. Some will be with a CSM for a period of time and then go into a team approach. And one of the critical things that we had to do, just, you know, to really get into some of the tactics, was build out programs into that team approach. So, right? So thinking about things like when there was a POC change on an account, how would we identify that and alert the team so that we could have proactive outreach?
Right.
Things like that. When an NPS score, when we saw detractors coming in, you know, using that as a trigger for a conversation with that customer, or when we saw usage drop significantly over a period of time. So it was really about identifying essentially risk in the customer base and putting our human effort around that, as well as identifying opportunities. So we also have started building out programs to identify when there is opportunity in that base of customers so that we can tee that up for a conversation too. I think it's so easy to only focus on the risk side of it. But we wanted to make sure that we were focused on, not just detractors, but promoters as well. And thinking about, could those promoters actually be advocates of ours and, give us referrals and things like that. So it was both sides.
And that's so much easier if you were actually working to an agreed program, which is, which is something that you do at the beginning, and then you can track your progress against and also the client's progress against, and then you can see where you're either on track or there's opportunity to bring, to change things proactively, as you say, because you've actually, rather than actually leaving their journey to chance, if you're agreeing a program up front, as it were, then you're more likely to, you're giving yourself the best chance of success further down the line, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. And so in thinking about building out our team models globally, that was really important, was, hey, this isn't just people kind of haphazardly calling into a customer base or owning a certain segment of customers. It was really about the programs that we ran into that and what those programs identified and teed up for our people.
And how do you, this is a little bit of a rabbit hole, I guess, because one of the things that you deal with thousands and thousands of customers. I mean, how do you try and do that at scale? I mean, do you have like a bit of a pro forma approach to that?
Well, so we do have thousands of customers today, but we want to have millions in the future, right? So,
world domination, no less.
Yeah. And that actually, has been a really, really great kind of mission for us to rally around, and was a big reason why we're investing in that low touch approach this year and beyond. But in particular, this year, in preparation for that kind of rapid growth, we really needed to look at that low touch model and get it right. I talked a little bit about programs that we're running into it, but running into that base, but That's critical for us being able to scale. Like, we just won't be able to scale the kind of organizations that we have today without doing that. So what I talked about earlier, just around programs, will just get more and more important. We have an AI team and what we call a customer insights team. We work really, really closely with them. And as you can imagine, our operations team is also heavily involved in a way that they haven't been in the past. So getting in there and really understanding those kind of inflection points in the journey, the milestones that a customer needs to reach, and teeing that up to not just the people who are talking to customers, but our marketing team, our sales team, and our product team. So it's all like very intertwined. But when I think about, if I'm being totally honest, if we hadn't made these investments, if we hadn't shifted our focus onto like, how do we create an excellent low touch experience for our customers, it would have broken, right? If you look at the growth that we were seeing, we would have had to hire at a pace that I think just our high standards for employees would have gone down. It would have had to, and sure, it's just something I wasn't willing to do. And so, we want to keep like our bar of the kind of people interactions really, really high, so that our customers feel like they truly have an advocate and a guide and a, essentially an extension of their team when they do talk to us, but that maybe they don't need to talk to us as much as they had previously because our product is giving them what they need.
Sure. So, I know that it's, as you would say, you're a bit earlier. Well, you're early on your journey, and that you're only about 18 months in or so to this transformation, as it were, or this change of approach. But you know, what's the early signs of the impact on, you know, your team, the business, customers and things? I mean, is it bearing fruit already?
It is. So a couple of the plays that we launched, so we launched some pretty specific plays around this. One of them was actually focused in our implementation. And it was a program that we used that basically allowed either the customer, the HubSpotter, or our systems to identify a customer that was in kind of a risky state going through onboarding. Our onboarding experience is 90 days. And so throughout that, we have different ways of identifying whether a customer goes off track. And we hadn't really done much with it, right? We used it as like a talking point in when a customer transitioned from implementation to CSM. But now we're actually operationalizing it where there's alert systems, we've got managers around it, there are teams of people ready to step in and get involved. And we're seeing some really positive early results. I'm like a little scared to talk about it because I don't want to jinx it. But in some of our pilot teams, we saw a double-digit improvement in customer health coming out of onboarding. So we're pretty excited about, you know, that play. We saw a shift when we shifted from a focus on revenue retention to customer dollar retention. As I mentioned earlier, we saw a 2-point lift in customer dollar retention just by doing that and getting our teams focused around customer success as opposed to that cross-sell, upsell, renewal motion. So, and obviously customer dollar retention is the biggest component of revenue retention. So if you get both right, then it's worth it. So yeah, we're seeing some early results that are pretty promising, not just in like the programs, which I just talked about with our implementation process, but overall, as we look at numbers.
I mean, that's great. I mean, what you've just kind of said there, it was just sheds or throws the light on again, this kind of old piece of wisdom or relatively old piece of wisdom, which says that, you know, that loyalty and retention and advocacy, sort of like historic research kind of shows that there are two big points that drive loyalty. And one is the point of sale and kind of all the, you know, the time around that, and also the point of service, i.e. when something goes wrong and you need some support. And those two kind of moments in the journey in many, many respects, or in the relationship, are key to loyalty, retention, advocacy and growth overall. So it's almost a bit like, it feels a bit like that success is, or customer success is rediscovering that and kind of amplifying it as much as possible.
Yeah, and I don't want to like paint the picture that it's all, you know, roses and butterflies here, but but we have seen, again, those early results. I think one of the other things that it exposed, just to talk about the other side of it, were what we call sharp edges, like points in the customer experience that just felt and didn't really, I guess, they didn't really align with the message that we were trying to get out there around customer success. So we call it sharp edges. An example of that where we had fairly rigid, contractual requirements for our customers. And so what this has done is forced us to take a look at some of those things and say, like, you know, why do we do this? Dharmesh, our founder, one of our co-founder, has this great line that I love to use, which is like, we want to make it emotionally difficult for our customers to leave, but procedurally easy. And to me, that I like to focus on the first piece, which is how do we make our customers feel like just they have this exceptional, not just relationship, but like results from the work that they're doing with us, and that they want to be our advocates and like you said, create that flywheel for acquisition in the future.
Yeah. I think it's, you know, I really like that idea, the sort of emotionally difficult to leave, but procedurally easy.
Yeah. It's Netflix, Netflix is a really good example of that, right? Like, I think they're the, you know, everybody loves Netflix. Like, and you also know that you're not signing your life away when you join. And we're no Netflix. Like, we certainly have different unit economics and all kinds of things. But it's still like a nice thing to like help guide our decisions.
I know, completely. I mean, I think it's as a concept, the idea of you're just saying, yeah, if you want to leave it, we'll make it easy for you. But actually, that we're working towards the idea that thought is never going to enter your head.
Yeah.
Which is cool. And I think it's a nice kind of it's a very useful aspiration.
Yeah, and it for sure is. Like, we still have, you know, lots of things that we're working through. I would just say it exposed it more than it had in the past and gave sure. us a real opportunity to, I don't know, pay attention to it and say, yeah, this isn't the best experience for the customer. And in some cases, there will still be sharp edges, right? Like, there are some things that we can't as a business change. But where it does, and we kind of scratch our heads and say, why do we do that? it's a nice guiding principle for us.
No, completely. And it also shines a light on some of the things and areas of a business that don't always come into view or get the, many people don't necessarily pay attention to when it comes to some of this sort of stuff, i.e. service, experience, success, et cetera, et cetera. So you talk about contractual stuff or finance or whatever it might be. Those are things that don't typically come into the mix very yep. often.
Yeah.
So it's good to see that you're actually taking a broad and holistic sort of view on things.
Yeah.
So Eva, if I was to say to you, there's some people that are listening into this, that are executives, leaders, entrepreneurs, and they're thinking, yeah, we're going through a similar sort of like process, or we're thinking about some similar sort of things. And if I was to ask you to give some advice to them in terms of if they were setting up their own success program, or they're thinking about setting it up to perform, as it were, what would be your advice based on kind of what you've learned over the last couple of years or so?
I'm going to start with actually just a technology plug okay. here. And we have a CRM, so you know, like it is going to sound a little bit like a plug, but tracking customer information is so important. And you hear these horror stories, and I've certainly seen them myself, where you kind of go into customer data and you can't get much out because it's so complex, or you don't have anywhere where you're storing it. So if you're starting out a business, the first thing that you should be doing is looking at a way technologically to just track customer information in a central way. The second thing that I would say, and that's more about what we've been talking about today, is this concept of customer success being a team sport. So yeah. really thinking about how every team plays a part in this, give them targets around customer success, think about NPS, think about your retention targets, and make sure that every team has skin in the game around that. And really just look at how they surround and support your customers, right? Is sales signing a contract and wiping their hands clean? Is services feeling like they're, you know, having to deal with like stuff that they shouldn't, right? Like bad fit customers, take a look at that. Really use data to identify where that's happening and when that's happening so that you can build bridges between the teams. Is your sales team invested in the success of your customer? Is your marketing team invested in the success of your customer product, et cetera? So that's really the message that I would give, is take a look at each team. I guarantee that kind of the traditional metrics for some of those teams, yeah, you may want to keep those in place, but really challenge yourself to introduce metrics that are totally focused on the long-term success of your customers.
Perfect. And so, Eva, before I ask you my final question, I always ask at the end of these kind of interviews, is there anything else that you'd like to add, point out, anything that we've missed that you'd like to mention?
I feel like we've covered a lot today. No, I feel like we've We've done a good job covering the customer experience here at HubSpot.
Cool. So that brings me to my final question that I always ask at the end of these interviews, Eva, and it is this. Is there anything that you would like to shamelessly plug?
I feel like I may have just shamelessly plugged our CRM, but but I really mean it. I've walked into so many organizations that either do or have a CRM and it's really, really complicated, or they don't have one. But I'm going to go bigger than that because, you know, HubSpot has really taken some pretty big steps into helping customers grow, whether it be through marketing, sales, or customer success through our platform. And I would just really, really encourage anyone who's listening to take a look at it. And looking at it from all of those angles that we talked about today, because we really do have a wide breadth of products that will centralize a lot of the systems work. And my shameless plug, my really shameless plug, is our people are pretty excellent too. So you really will get a great experience as a HubSpot customer.
Perfect. Eva, I mean, because I remember speaking to HubSpot a number of years ago when you were way, way smaller than you already are now, and you're becoming much, much larger on the route to becoming huge. But I'd like to say, people that I've always spoken to have just been tremendously enthusiastic and just kind of just want to do the right sort of things, which has been great. But I'll stop talking kind of now and say thank you for your time and sharing your insight and being so honest with us today. I mean, that's been really helpful. So thanks very much.
Yeah, it was lovely. Thank you so much for inviting me to be a part of the podcast today.
Well, that's it for another interview. I really hope you enjoyed it. Now, every time I complete one of these interviews, I learn something new. And I try and incorporate that new learning into my writing, my speaking, my workshops, and the consulting that I do for my clients. If you're interested, you can find out more about how I work with clients over at adrianswimsko.com. But one final thing before I go. Please consider heading over to iTunes or whichever podcast platform you choose to use, and do leave a review. Every little helps, as they say. Anyway, that's all for now. Thank you for listening, and do listen in again. All the very best.